The scene is familiar. A couple sits across from each other, the silence between them thick with accusation and pain. One has just discovered the unthinkable, evidence of their partner's affair. In an instant, their shared reality shatters. This moment of discovery represents one of life's most devastating emotional earthquakes, yet it's happening everywhere, all the time. Affairs are simultaneously universal and deeply personal, condemned yet persistently practiced across cultures and throughout history. Esther Perel's groundbreaking work on infidelity has captivated millions. Her TED Talks on the subject have garnered over 18 million views, and celebrities from Kristen Bell to Dan Savage cite her as their relationship guru. As a therapist who has spent nearly 3 decades exploring love and desire in modern relationships, Perel offers a perspective on infidelity that challenges our cultural scripts and invites us to look beyond simple morality tales. The state of affairs emerged as her response to the overwhelming interest in the single chapter on infidelity in her first bestseller, Mating in Captivity, proving that this taboo topic touches nearly everyone in some way. For centuries, adultery has been both universally forbidden and universally practiced. It has existed since marriage was invented and remains tenacious enough that it earned 2 separate commandments in the Bible. Yet our conversations about infidelity remain stuck in simplistic binaries: right or wrong, stay or leave, forgive or condemn. When I ask audiences if they've been affected by infidelity, hands overwhelmingly go up. Affairs create ripple effects that extend far beyond the couple: the friend who witnessed a colleague kissing someone not their spouse, the teenager who discovered a parent's double life, the mother who can't accept her son staying with an unfaithful wife. Infidelity binds entire networks of people in complicated webs of secrecy, loyalty, and judgment. Most affairs involve ordinary people with ordinary values, people who believe in monogamy but find themselves crossing boundaries they never imagined crossing. Their stories are typically more banal than headlines suggest, stemming from loneliness, sexual deadness, or craving attention rather than pathological behavior. Some are simple flings, while others reveal overwhelming love. Paradoxically, many people stray precisely to preserve their marriages. I tell couples who come to me after an affair, "Your first marriage is over. Would you like to create a second one together?" This framing acknowledges both the devastation and the possibility that follows betrayal. Affairs force us to confront unsettling questions about human nature, the power of eros, and the complexity of commitment. They bring us face to face with the opposing forces of passion: the lure, the guilt, the heartbreak, the madness of suspicion, the urge for revenge. Our cultural response to infidelity has shifted dramatically. Once, divorce carried the stigma. Now, choosing to stay when you can leave is the new shame. When Jessica discovered her husband Julian's affair with a coworker, online advice was simplistic: move on, he'll do it again, kick him to the curb. But Jessica still loved Julian and wanted to work things out, only to feel judged as one of those women. By contrast, Moroccan women laugh at the Western impulse to leave cheating husbands. All of Morocco would be divorced. The rush to divorce makes no allowance for human error, repair, or growth. What constitutes infidelity is anything but fixed, especially in the digital age. With no universal definition, estimates of its prevalence vary widely: 26 to 70% for women, 33 to 75% for men, though everyone agrees numbers are rising, with women rapidly closing the infidelity gap. The common thread through all betrayals is the breach of trust, but each situation is uniquely complex. Elias visits strip clubs but claims fidelity because, "I watch, I talk, I pay, but I don't touch," while his wife Linda disagrees. Ashley's girlfriend Lisa hooks up with an ex-boyfriend, arguing it doesn't count because he's male. Shannon feels betrayed when her boyfriend buys condoms while they're trying to conceive. Digital technology further complicates matters. People can have virtual affairs while lying next to their partners in bed. The internet has made infidelity accessible, affordable, anonymous, and increasingly ambiguous. Today, relationship ethics are no longer dictated by religious authority, but negotiated by couples themselves. The problem is that most couples don't explicitly negotiate these agreements. Some establish boundaries through direct communication, but most rely on trial and error, creating a patchwork of unspoken rules. Gay couples and those practicing consensual non-monogamy tend to negotiate these boundaries more explicitly, while romantic idealists avoid such discussions, believing that finding the one should eliminate any desire for others. For me, infidelity includes three constitutive elements: secrecy, sexual alchemy, and emotional involvement. Secrecy is the primary organizing principle, intensifying the erotic charge while living in the shadow of the primary relationship. Sexual alchemy extends beyond physical acts to include the broader erotic mind and energy. Emotional involvement exists on a spectrum, from deep love affairs to recreational flings. These elements combine uniquely in each situation, challenging simplistic definitions of betrayal. Our definitions of infidelity evolved based on our position in the triangle. Heather, once betrayed by her fiancé Fred, later became the other woman with Ryan, a married man who claimed his marriage was over. Despite her strong opinions against affairs, she justified her actions by focusing on circumstances rather than character. When Ryan's wife Blair discovered their relationship, what was a budding romance became a systemic unraveling, affecting everyone involved. Their story demonstrates how our narratives about infidelity transform with our changing roles and perspectives. Affairs have transformed because marriage itself has undergone an extreme makeover. For millennia, marriage was primarily an economic alliance between families rather than a love match between individuals. Marital fidelity wasn't about love, but about patriarchy and ensuring patrimony. Men needed to know which children were theirs. While women faced severe consequences for infidelity, men enjoyed tacit freedom to roam. Only with romanticism in the late 18th century did marriage evolve into a companionate relationship based on love rather than duty. Today, we're engaged in a grand experiment where sex has become decoupled from reproduction and rooted in desire, a sovereign expression of our free choice and identity. We want sex because we're in the mood, ideally with unflagging passion for decades with the same partner. Our expectations of marriage have taken on epic proportions. We want everything traditional marriage provided, security, children, property, but also demand that our partner love us, desire us, and remain interested in us. We expect them to be best friends, confidants, and passionate lovers. Within the wedding band, we seek contradictory ideals: stability and adventure, familiarity and novelty, continuity and surprise. Romantic love has replaced religion as our source of meaning and transcendence, creating an unholy muddle of two holy loves that inevitably disappoints. We've created marriages where infidelity shouldn't happen, yet it does, and more fragile, love-based marriages often leave us more vulnerable than pragmatic ones did. In our consumer society, we're programmed to seek novelty and replace the obsolete. We no longer divorce because we're unhappy, but because we could be happier. The fear of missing out drives a hedonic treadmill where rising expectations prevent contentment. Paradoxically, our sexually liberated society has become more intolerant of cheating. After years of sexual nomadism before marriage, the choice to become exclusive carries profound meaning. We used to get married and have sex for the first time. Now we get married and stop having sex with others, a testament to our commitment. Monogamy has become an elective that confirms the uniqueness of our significant other. In a world where it's easy to feel disposable, being chosen takes on unprecedented importance. Infidelity shatters this grand ambition of love, declaring you're not so special after all. The revelation of an affair is eviscerating, a betrayal on multiple levels that turns your world upside down. As Jillian describes after discovering her husband Costa's 8-year affair, it was like my whole life had been erased. Modern psychologists borrow from trauma studies to explain the overwhelming symptoms: obsessive rumination, hypervigilance, dissociation, and uncontrollable emotions. Technology has become the primary revealer of affairs, sometimes happening in real time. From iPads left at home transmitting text conversations to baby monitors picking up sounds they shouldn't, our devices have become unwitting private investigators. The digital world preserves evidence, too. Jillian obsessively reads through Costa's emails and texts, trying to reconstruct a timeline of betrayal that spanned 8 years, wondering what she was doing when he was messaging Amanda. Infidelity attacks our most important psychic structure, our memory of the past. For Jillian, the discovery creates a desperate need to reweave the tapestry of her life as she obsessively tries to align her memories with the newly revealed reality. She experiences what psychologist Peter Frankl calls being rigidly stuck in the present, and what psychiatrist Anna Fels describes as the loss of a coherent narrative, perhaps the greatest betrayal of all. For Jillian, infidelity isn't just a loss of love, but a loss of self. I am now a member of the cuckolded wives club. You made me this person. When love goes plural, the spell of oneness breaks. While Costa insists she remains the love of his life, Jillian struggles to believe him after discovering years of mourning texts to Amanda. This identity crisis isn't universal. In conversations with Senegalese women, I found they experienced the pain of infidelity without the complete identity collapse, as they view male cheating as what men do, rather than a reflection on their worth. The early post-affair therapy period is extremely volatile, with weeks of careful reconstruction potentially crumbling from a single remark. The unfaithful partner bears primary responsibility for repair, including the crucial transfer of vigilance, where they take on the role of remembering and addressing the affair instead of trying to forget it. When Costa proactively brings up Amanda-related situations and volunteers information without being asked, he helps restore trust by showing they're on the same side. Not all affairs hurt equally, yet there's no reliable correlation between the severity of the infidelity and the intensity of the response. While it's tempting to create a hierarchy of violations, from porn use to long-term parallel families, the legitimacy of one's reaction can't be measured simply by the magnitude of the offense. Some relationships collapse after a brief hookup, while others survive extensive betrayals. For Kevin, the greatest pain came not from his girlfriend Taylor's infidelity, but from his trusted older brother Hunter's betrayal. Despite warning signs and his mother's concerns about their studying together after the breakup, Kevin's unconditional trust prevented him from seeing the truth. The depth of betrayal corresponds directly to the depth of attachment. Hunter's betrayal cut deeper than Taylor's because it severed multiple bonds of trust simultaneously. When infidelity is suspected, we become relentless detectives, tracking minute changes, unusual schedules, mismatched stories, new grooming habits. Initially, we keep questions to ourselves, fearing false accusations or confirmation of our worst fears. Eventually, we begin probing, sometimes bluffing, like Anton, who falsely claimed to have proof of Josie's infidelity, only to learn more than he wanted. The calculated planning behind some affairs causes unique pain. The deliberate deception implies the unfaithful partner weighed their desires against consequences and chose to proceed anyway. Charlotte was devastated not just by Steve's high-end escort encounters, but by the elaborate preparations required. Withdrawing thousands in cash, planning meetings, changing sheets, each step representing a moment he actively erased her from his consciousness. After discovery, betrayed partners often become unwilling accomplices in secrecy. Lynn, who discovered her husband's 6-year affair with his secretary, now lies to protect her children and, ironically, her unfaithful husband. This reversal, where the betrayed becomes the secret keeper, creates a painful secondary imprisonment. Social fallout compounds the wound through gossip, blame, and pity. The betrayed face whispers about what they should have known or done differently. While infidelity has been explored by countless literary masters, jealousy, that sickening combination of possessiveness, suspicion, rage, and humiliation, is curiously absent from modern therapeutic literature on affairs. Cultural differences shape our relationship to jealousy. Latin cultures openly acknowledge it as central to love and betrayal, while Anglo-Saxon and Protestant cultures tend to suppress it, focusing instead on betrayal, trust, and lying. After discovering her husband Nigel's affair with young Clarissa, Polly can't stop obsessing over the other woman. Though Nigel returned after being rejected by his mistress, Polly demands he tell Clarissa it was just a foolish physical infatuation and that he loves me and doesn't love her. When I identify this as jealousy, Polly feels exposed. The jealous person knows they aren't sympathetic and seeks more acceptable vocabulary like trauma and flashbacks. While trauma has become the dominant framework for discussing infidelity, jealousy deserves recognition as a fundamental part of love. As Ayala Malak Pines writes, jealousy is the shadow of love. It affirms that we value our partner and relationship. The Greek root word zelos means zeal, suggesting something worth fighting for rather than mere victimization. Many couples prefer seeing themselves as protagonists in a forlorn love story rather than parties in a failed institution. Polly confesses that during sex, she imagines being Clarissa, a voluptuous 35-year-old Spanish bartender with big boobs and an accent. She fantasizes about their encounters in forbidden places, feeling both aroused and humiliated afterward. Many couples are ashamed to admit the intense erotic charge that sometimes follows affair discovery. As sexologist Jack Morin identifies in The Erotic Mind, longing, desire for what's absent, is the primary cornerstone of eroticism. The fear of loss triggered by infidelity can rekindle dormant flames, while jealousy can act as an unexpected aphrodisiac. Envy relates to something you want but don't have, while jealousy concerns something you have but fear losing. Morgan, a 50-something journalist, couldn't separate her jealousy of husband Ethan's lover Cleo from her envy of their relationship. After discovering Ethan's electronic archive of bliss, Morgan obsessively studied Cleo's social media in an orgy of masochism. She idealized Cleo as the very portrait of an earth goddess, a yogini, filmmaker, adventurer, while simultaneously engaging in self-abnegation. The dagger of romantic betrayal cuts both ways. We can use it to slash ourselves or to hurt back. We swing between depression and indignation, from collapse to counterattack. When betrayed, we often feel deeply unworthy, our feared inadequacies confirmed. Dylan, discovering his partner's affair with his best friend, oscillated between self-condemnation and righteous anger. She kept telling me I was just being insecure. Now I know I wasn't insecure. I was right. While some turn inward with blame, many first experience rage that sparks the urge for retaliation. The vengeful heart proves wickedly imaginative, from boiling a partner's favorite clothes to uploading private sex tapes online. You're not getting off scot-free. I'm going to make you pay for this. Infidelity illuminates the scoreboard of marriage, the giving and taking, concessions and demands. All sacrifices made in the name of love are stripped of meaning. I'll move to Singapore for your dream job, or I'll put my career on hold to raise our family. These accommodations that once made sense within the trust of us now feel like a farce. Sometimes, nothing less than inflicting equal pain will satisfy the betrayed. Jess, who fell for Bart only to discover his infidelities, sought revenge through her ex-boyfriend Rob. "I don't think what I'm doing is okay," she admits, "but this is one way to get to him, and he deserves it." The fact that Bart strayed first makes her feel justified in her own corrective cheating. Even the most enlightened can be struck by vengeful urges. Alexander, who had an open relationship with his girlfriend Erin, found himself consumed with rage when she broke their agreement by sleeping with Micah, his professional rival. "I literally see red. It's a physical reptilian thing," he confesses. His mind fills with violent fantasies of confronting Micah. Camille's revenge tale demonstrates creative restorative justice. Rather than remaining a victim of her husband Amadou's infidelity, she switched from victim to actor, entering his world and speaking to him in his language. Later, when encountering the other woman, she chose to dress beautifully rather than confront her, realizing to be happy was a much better revenge than any karate moves could ever be. The art of restorative justice is elevating yourself rather than simply denigrating those who hurt you. The question of whether to reveal an affair is rarely straightforward. While some situations clearly demand disclosure, pregnancy, STI risk, social media exposure, Others present genuine ethical dilemmas. Should Lena tell her fiancé about a drunken one-night stand when his first wife left him for his best friend and he said cheating would end their relationship? Should Yuri confess when his affair has paradoxically improved his marriage by eliminating sexual pressure? Should Holly risk losing custody of her children by revealing her affair to her controlling husband? When counseling about truth-telling, therapist Lisa Spiegel suggests asking, is it honest, helpful, and kind? Truth can be healing, but also irrevocably destructive. The case of a dying patient wanting to confess lifetime infidelity illustrates this complexity. He might die in relief while his widow lives in turmoil. Modern American culture sends confounding messages about secrecy. As Evan Imber Black notes, we've shifted from making shameful secrets out of too many life events to assuming that revealing secrets is always morally superior and automatically healing. Modern intimacy is defined by self-disclosure, sharing our most personal feelings. From childhood, we define best friends as those to whom we tell secrets. Since partners are now expected to be best friends, we believe I should be able to tell you anything and feel entitled to immediate access to our partner's thoughts. American culture reveres absolute frankness and elevates truth-telling to moral perfection, while other cultures believe eliminating all ambiguity may compromise intimacy rather than increase it. There's also an important distinction between privacy, functional boundaries we agree on, and secrecy, deliberately misleading others. Amira, a Pakistani-American student, discovered her father's affair by finding texts from his secretary. Unlike her American friends, who would immediately tell their mother, Amira chose silence. Yes, we value honesty and trust, she explains, but we value the preservation of the family even more. In her collectivist framework, family loyalty trumps disclosure, even though she felt anger on her mother's behalf. By contrast, Marnie, a young New Yorker, exposed her mother's affair by throwing her secret phone to her father. While she still agonizes over the family's splintering, she never questions her moral stance that the personal right to know trumps the harmony of the family. What if the affair had nothing to do with you? This question seems ludicrous to betrayed partners who experience infidelity as a direct personal attack. When exploring why people stray, conventional wisdom offers two explanations. Either there's a problem with the marriage or with the individual. Affairs are typically viewed as symptoms of dysfunction, with psychological diagnoses replacing religious concepts of sin. But medicalizing infidelity, whether through attachment disorders, sex addiction, or genetic predisposition, often short-circuits the meaning-making process. While some affairs do stem from relationship deficits or psychological issues, many defy these explanations. I frequently meet people who insist, "I love my spouse, we are best friends and happy together, but I am having an affair." This challenges our assumption that good intimacy guarantees fidelity and that affairs always indicate problems. Sometimes, when we seek another's gaze, we're not turning away from our partner, but from who we've become. We're searching not for another lover, but another version of ourselves. The most intoxicating other discovered in affairs is often not the new partner, but a new self. Take Priya, who has a seemingly perfect marriage with Colin, great kids, financial stability, careers they love. Yet she's having an affair with an arborist, someone with tattoos who drives a truck, completely unlike anyone she'd normally date. They meet furtively in cars and movie theaters, her feeling like a teenager with a boyfriend. As a dutiful Indian immigrant's daughter who always got straight A's and married the right guy, Priya has always wondered what life is like for those who aren't so good. Her affair isn't about marital problems, but about identity, a belated adolescent rebellion as she approaches 50 while watching her teenage daughters enjoy freedoms she never knew. Transgression lies at the heart of human nature, the thrill of breaking rules, pushing boundaries, and getting away with it. As sexologist Jack Morin observes in his Erotic Equation, attraction plus obstacles equal excitement. We're most intensely excited when poised between ecstasy and disaster. The quest for unexplored selves powerfully drives affairs. While Priya's parallel universe transported her to the teenager she never was, Others reconnect with who they once were or who they could have been. Modern life breathes suspicion that we're missing something vital, that we've overlooked authentic possibilities or chances at unknown happiness. Affairs often occur in response to our most basic human fear, confrontation with mortality. They frequently follow losses, tragedies, health scares, or symbolic deaths like infertility or unemployment. When faced with the brevity and fragility of life, people become unwilling to settle for a life half-lived. The thirst for life triggered in these encounters topples people with irresistible force, slowing time, amplifying senses, and making everything feel more vibrant. When Danica's husband, Stefan, discovered her affair, he recognized in her passionate messages the vital woman he'd once fallen in love with but hadn't seen in years. While Danica feels shame and wants to dismiss the affair as a mistake, her therapist encourages her to separate wrong from hurtful, to acknowledge the positive aspects of her experience while taking responsibility for the pain caused. Affairs often reflect an existential conflict within us. We crave both security and adventure, stability and novelty. As psychoanalyst Stephen Mitchell points out, these fundamental needs pull us in opposite directions throughout our lives. Modern romance promises we can satisfy both in one relationship, and during the honeymoon phase, this seems possible. However, the exuberance of beginnings is fueled by uncertainty. As we make love more secure, we inevitably dial down its intensity. Infidelity serves as evidence of how challenging it is to consolidate our disharmonious drives. Laura Kipnis suggests affairs aren't merely byproducts of wanting two things at once, but a resolution to this conflict, the elegant solution of externalizing the conflict through competing agents of your custom-designed triangle. Some seek outside what they cannot find at home, while others pursue what they don't want at home, valuing their domestic stability too much to disturb it with eros. Women who shut down sexually at home yet awaken in affairs represent an archetypal tale of muted eros. Many husbands struggle to understand how their sexually disinterested wives suddenly can't get enough in an affair. The context matters more than the men, specifically the story a woman weaves for herself and the character she plays within it. Researcher Marta Miana challenges assumptions that women's sexuality depends primarily on relational connectedness, suggesting women are just as aroused by the novel, the illicit, the raw, but prioritize emotional connection. When women transition to marriage, many experience sexuality shifting from desire to duty. In affairs, women bring self-determination to their pleasure, pursuing their own satisfaction through autonomy. The question arises repeatedly: isn't the extent of infidelity proof that monogamy is simply not human nature? Some argue we could avoid the pain and deceit of infidelity by embracing consensual non-monogamy, while others maintain that real marriage means true commitment to one person. Even when we have freedom to pursue other sexual partners, we remain lured by the forbidden. Monogamy may not be natural, but transgression surely is. Every relationship has boundaries that invite trespassers. Breaking rules is thrilling and erotic, whether those rules are strict or lenient. This explains why infidelity occurs even in open relationships. Beyond the sexual aspects, ethical non-monogamy attempts to address core existential paradoxes all couples face: security versus adventure, togetherness versus autonomy, stability versus novelty. The fundamental question is whether new configurations of commitment can achieve what Pascal Bruckner calls the improbable union of belonging and independence. Today's non-monogamists differ from the free love pioneers of earlier decades. Many are children of divorce, seeking more realistic ways to make commitments last. Their arrangements vary widely, from occasional hall passes to swinging couples to polyamorous networks. These aren't rebels against commitment, but seekers of authenticity who want connections that don't disconnect them from themselves or others. To meaningfully critique monogamy, we must look beyond counting sexual partners and examine fidelity more deeply. Dan Savage illustrates this by comparing his 20-year non-exclusive marriage to a 5-times married woman who accused him of lacking commitment. What if fidelity were redefined as relational constancy, encompassing respect, loyalty, and emotional intimacy, which may or may not include sexual exclusivity? Despite monogamy's cultural importance, it's rarely discussed openly, perhaps because questioning it seems to admit that love hasn't tamed our desires. The topic is even more polarizing than infidelity, often reduced to a binary of closed versus open relationships. In reality, monogamy exists on a continuum, particularly in our digital age. Each person negotiates their particular brand, whether it allows fantasizing about others during sex, porn consumption, sexting, app browsing, or more. Are love and sex finite resources, or can sexual exploration with others actually enhance a relationship? For some couples, like Kyle and Lucy, controlled non-exclusivity actually strengthens their connection. After years of fantasy, they gradually introduced real experiences with others. Him watching her with another man, her having occasional encounters with his encouragement. They enjoy transgressing social norms together rather than against each other, maintaining faithfulness in an unorthodox form. What remains after infidelity's crisis passes? The breach represents a decisive moment with seemingly binary outcomes, together or apart, but this tells us little about the quality of what follows. Did insights from the ordeal sustain the couple? Did they briefly reconcile before reverting to pre-affair patterns? Did the betrayal repeat, or did they ultimately separate? Many affairs do end marriages. Kate left Rice after repeated infidelities made trust impossible, yet his betrayal haunted her subsequent relationships. After driving away several partners with her jealousy, she eventually married a fellow betrayed spouse who understood her pain. They met through survivinginfidelity.com, bonded by shared trauma. Our culture views divorce as failure, especially when triggered by infidelity. I believe a successful marriage doesn't only end at the funeral parlor. Sometimes relationships run their course, and helping them end with dignity becomes my goal. Just as we have rituals to mark beginnings, we need them for endings. A marriage is the nexus of an entire life together, not something to discard like an abandoned cemetery where lie, unsung and unhonored, the dead whom they have ceased to cherish. When affairs become legitimate relationships, they carry their origins into the new union. For some, there's relief in emerging from secrecy, but new concerns quickly arise. Sometimes the affair was better clandestine, like with Nicole and Ron, who after 5 passionate years of waiting, finally married, only for him to immediately withdraw sexually. Now she suspects he's having another affair, continuing his pattern of desiring only mistresses, never wives. Most couples who seek my help intend to stay together, and many do. But togetherness takes many forms. I've identified 3 post-infidelity outcomes for couples who remain together: the sufferers, the builders, and the explorers. The sufferers remain trapped in the past, with the affair becoming a black hole that ensnares them in endless bitterness, revenge, and self-pity. Even years later, the betrayal remains the epicenter of their relationship. Builders remain together because they value commitment and the life they've created. They move past infidelity, but don't necessarily transcend it, reverting to a peaceful version of their previous relationship without significant change. They focus on structural strengths, not seeking massive renovations, just wanting to return to the home they know. For explorers, the affair becomes a catalyst for transformation, containing seeds of something positive despite the pain. These couples experience a combustive rekindling of desire, a potent mixture of anxiety and lust sparked by fear of loss. Madison and Dennis exemplify this approach. They sustained wild emotional swings without divorcing, turning infidelity into an enlarging emotional journey. They now speak of our crisis, rather than what you did to me, becoming joint scriptwriters of their shared experience. While many relationships die after infidelity, others survive and revive. The lessons are counterintuitive. Affair-proofing through surveillance and self-policing often backfires, creating what Catherine Frank calls the enhanced eroticization of transgressions. rather than insulating ourselves with the false notion that it could never happen to me, we must learn to live with uncertainties and attractions. Trust isn't about certainty, but about coping with uncertainty. It's a confident relationship to the unknown. The challenge for steady couples is finding ways to collaborate in transgression rather than transgressing against each other, creating their own authentic, illicit experiences that activate erotic energy in their relationship.